Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sorry for being late, I spaced out a bit. Priṣṭam priyetaram viva pratibhāṣamānam Priṣṭam priyetaram viva pratibhāṣamānam Priṣṭam priyetaram viva pratibhāṣamānam Krishnam tad arata vinivartita sarva kama Krishnam tarata vinivartita sarva kama
Krishnam tarata vinivartita sarva kama
Priṣṭam priyataram iva pratibhāṣamānam Krishnam tarata vinivartita sarva kāmaha Netre vimrija ruditopāhate smā kinjit Netre vimrija rudito pahate sma kinchit.
Netre vimrija rudito pahate sma kinchit.
Sangrambha gadgada giro abruvatam nuraktaha. Samramba gadgada giro bruva tandurakta Samramba gadgada giro bruva tandurakta Netre vimrija
Their beloved
Priya itaram
Just the opposite of a beloved
Eva, as if,
Pratibhasamanam,
addressing them, Krishnam,
Lord Krishna,
Tadartha,
for his sake,
Vinivartita,
desisted from,
Sarva,
all,
Kamaha,
their material desires.
Netre,
their eyes.
Vimrija,
wiping.
Rudita,
their crying.
Upahate,
having stopped.
Sma,
then.
Kinchit,
something.
Sangrambha,
with agitation.
Gadgada,
choking up.
Gira,
their voices.
Abruvata,
they spoke.
Anurakta,
firmly attached.
So again, we see in this verse, there's many words here which are actually saying quite a lot. Just for instance, Preshta, there's a group of sakis which are called, from memory, it's the Parama Preshtis, I think, which means that they're the most beloved, or that Krishna is their most beloved. So here we say Preshtam, it's talking about the gopis and the affection they're feeling for Krishna. And then it goes on to say, Vinivartita sarva kama. So basically means desisted from all material desires. It's indicating the gopis have no material desires. And here they are, they're out in the forest with Krishna, and Krishna is giving them all these different, you know, what's for them confusing instructions. You know, here you are, you've called us out into the forest, now you're telling us to go home and look, take care of our husbands and our children. And, you know, saying that the duty of the girl is to take care of her husband and stuff like that. And but here we see that they're being spoken of by Sukadeva Goswami as being is completely free from all material desires. They actually have no material affections, and not only no material affections, but no material lust. Their attractions for Krishna are not impelled by any kind of material lust or any kind of material desire. It's just that they have this spontaneous love for Krishna, which is confirmed later on in this verse also. Choking up here. One says, abruvata, this last word, abruvatanu raktaha. So they spoke, and this is anurakta, firmly attached. And so this, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he analyzes this word anurakta, and he says it means those who have anurag, you know, which means that this firm love, this deep love for Krishna. So it's you know, talking about the gopis. Actually, what does he say here? He says, those who are blind, he says, anuraga, he says, anurakta, implying that those who are blinded by ecstatic attraction or anuraga. So the anurakta, they're actually completely blinded. They don't see anything else. They don't see their material obligations. They're not interested in their husbands and their families and all this sort of stuff. They're just blinded by this ecstatic attraction for Krishna. Therefore, the only thing they want to do is to be in the forest with Krishna and to do whatever is pleasing to Krishna, except, of course, go back to their husbands, because that's not pleasing to them. Yeah. But ultimately, it's not like they're motivated by, you know, it's just like in devotional services, there's different facets of devotional service or different stages of devotional service. And there is, it's discussed in the Gita. We see in the 9th chapter, Krishna, he says to Arjuna, he says, what's that verse? Yat karoshi, yadash nasi, yad jahosi dasi, yat tapashashi kunte, yat tat kurushva madaparnam. So he says there to Arjuna, he says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away. So he's saying, all the things that you do that as an offering unto me. So he's saying, this is what they call sakam bhakti. It means it's mixed with material desires. Yeah? So when the gopis hear their attraction to Krishna, it's not sakam bhakti, it's not mixed with material desires. It's actually, they're just doing what Krishna wants. Because there's the sakam and there's naishkam. Naishkam bhakti means there's no personal desire involved in it whatsoever. It's just simply for the satisfaction of Krishna, which is what Krishna reveals to Arjuna at the end of the Gita. And he says, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage to me, thus you will come to me without fail, I promise you this because you are my dear friend. And he says, Savadaman Pridyajamamikam Sharam Brajaham Tam Savapapapyo Mokshish Mahasuchaha. You abandon everything, give up all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. So this is what he's, in the Gita, this is what Krishna is asking Arjuna for ultimately, is Naishkam Bhakti. But earlier on he's giving different facets of bhakti or different stages of bhakti that one can practice if we have material desires. And we see the same thing is there also in the 12th chapter, where Krishna, because Arjuna is asking him what is the highest stage of devotional service, and then Krishna he starts off and he reveals to him what is the ultimate or the highest level of devotional service, and then he goes in the successive steps. I think he starts around about verse 12, 7 or 8 or something like that. And it just goes through all these different successive steps of, okay, if you can't do this, if you can't do this topmost stage of bhakti, where you're just constantly immersed in thinking of me, all your activities are dedicated to me, everything like that, then do this. And if you can't do this, then it gives all these like successive steps back from the principles of uttam bhakti. And then in the end he says, but best of all is this stage of uttam bhakti. You know, he doesn't use those words, but he's saying that this is the best of all. So we see here that this devotional service that's offered by the gopis, this is the highest stage of devotional service. And we see that also Lord Chaitanya,
he glorified this as being the highest stage of devotional service. There was no no means or method of approaching Krishna that was as elevated as that which was practiced by the gopis, the Braja gopis. So we see here that, you know, the gopis, that they just want to do whatever it is to please Krishna, and we see here that Krishna is saying, well, you know, go back to your husbands, you shouldn't be here. But they won't do that, because they understand ultimately that this is not really what Krishna wants. Krishna wants to be there with them and enjoy, but he's putting them through these different emotional experiences, just, I guess, you know, in a sense, testing love. And we see that Krishna, he does that often with his devotees, that he puts us in a situation, puts devotees in a situation where they're experiencing all types of different emotions, just like we see with Arjuna in the Gita. Then, you know, like Arjuna, right at the start of the Gita, he's like, you know, they're all the warriors, they're out on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and they're primed to fight, you know, they're blowing their conscience and beating their chest and all this type of stuff, you know, just to get out there and kill each other. And that's what Chakras are like, you know, when a battle comes to them and it's like unsought, they're really happy, and you know, oh great, I'm getting a chance to fight. And just like we see when Draupadi, when she was won at the Swayamvara ceremony, and Drupad didn't know who the warrior was that won her, then he sent Dhrishtadyumna back to, he said, follow them and find out where they're staying. So they were staying in the house of a potter, and Dhrishtadyumna went back there and he hid in the bushes and he was listening to the conversation that was going on, and talking about how they'd won Draupadi and things like that. And then he stayed there, and when they went to bed at night, they were lying down in bed at night and they were just talking about weapons and battles and all this type of stuff, you know, because this is what's attractive to the Kshatriyas. And so they're just naturally, you know, interested in these types of things. So we see Arjuna the Pandavas, when they were there at Kurukshetra, they're ready to fight, they're primed to fight, and they're out there and they're going to, you know, defeat the enemy. And then when Krishna took Arjuna in front, because Arjuna, he said, "You will take my chariot in between the armies. I want to see who's here to fight." And then so he became quite disturbed, seeing that his grandfather and his cousins and, you know, his martial teacher and his uncles and all these great, you know, respectable persons that were very dear to him were on the other side. So he became quite disturbed. And we see throughout the Gita that then Krishna's running Arjuna through all these different emotions, you know, and in a sense is purifying him of all these emotions and all these attachments, bringing him to the point of ultimate surrender, of just like, you give it all up, whatever it is you think, whatever. Because like we see right in the beginning of the Gita, Arjuna, he starts to philosophize and get all like, you know, into like, well, you know, I've heard from authorities that, you know, if we do this, it's going to be very inauspicious, impious, etc. like that. And so then Krishna just runs him through this whole range of experiences and emotions and gets him to the point of finally just giving it all up and surrendering. You know, and finally what does he do at the end? He says, Karashe Vachnam Tava. Whatever you're saying, I'm going to do that. And so we see here, same thing, is the gopis are being run through this all these different emotions. Krishna's playing with them, bringing him to the point of ultimate surrender. So and he's getting to the point where they're just, anything Krishna wants, they'll do. They'll give up everything. They'll give up all their position in society, the respect, everything in society. They'll just give it all up just for the satisfaction of Krishna, and with no thought of ever going back to it. You know, because Krishna's sending them back to the husbands, and they're thinking, well, we can't go back. We've come into the forest. You know, we've come to the forest to be with you in the middle of the night. What will our husbands say? What will our families say? We can't go back. So this is this selfless love. And we see that actually in the process of in our experiences in devotional service, in practicing devotional service, we also get put through these different types of things. We get put through these different, I guess if you like, tests, to test our sincerity, to test our you know, integrity and our seriousness in this process, to see, are we really interested in Krishna consciousness, or are we interested in material life? Are we interested in the other things that come along?
And we see that in the practice of devotional service, that many different things will be presented to us. And sometimes we have experiences. I know personally myself, I've had experiences which have been very emotionally and physically and psychologically testing for me, and have really tested to see if I'm really serious about this process, or if I just, you know, doing it because it seems like a good thing at the time, or it's like, you know, socially acceptable or whatever. And we see that in different traditions, also in the Gaudiya tradition, that there are persons who come and practice Krishna consciousness because it's a socially acceptable thing. Just like, you know, I don't want to criticize any other tradition, because, you know, all these different traditions, they have their valid practices. Yeah, we see, for instance, in Christianity, it's a widely accepted understanding that many people go to church on Sundays because it's a socially acceptable thing. You know, it helps them in their social circle, you know, to climb up the social ladder or the economic ladder, because, you know, like, or they're working for someone, or they want to get a contract with someone, and this person's a Christian. So if they're seen as being, you know, a good God-fearing Christian, so to speak, then this will give them brownie points, or, you know, I think they call it kudos with this person. And they'll be seen as being, you know, acceptable. So there are people like that who will go and practice their religiosity, their so-called religiosity, just for the sake of economic or social acceptance, or, you know, economic development or social acceptance. And this is not ultimately very beneficial. I mean, there is some benefit there, but that will be tested. At some point, that will be tested. And there's a nice saying that Prabhupada would often comment on. I don't think I can remember the Bengali for it though. Whatever bhajan you have performed will be tested at the time of death. So you may spend your whole life engaged in so-called practices of devotional service, yet the motivation is improper. So, I mean, we always need to analyze this with ourselves. Whatever activity we're doing is to look at, what is my motivation here? Am I doing this for the satisfaction of Krishna? Am I doing this for my own satisfaction? Am I doing this because someone else thinks it's good? You know, because I'll look good in their eyes? What's my motivation here? Because we may spend our whole life practicing devotional service, but if we've had an improper motivation, then that will be tested. That will, you know, at the time of death, then you know, this will come before us, and we'll have to deal with it. So we see here that with the gopis, they only have one motivation, and their motivation is for nothing but the satisfaction of Krishna. They're not interested in anything else. They're not interested in their own personal position. They're not interested in their own economic development. You know, they don't care what other people think about them. Even their parents, their children, their husbands, they don't care what they think about them. They're just simply interested in the satisfaction of Krishna. And this is the process of devotional service that Krishna is emphasizing to Arjuna in the Gita. And this is the same process that Lord Chaitanya is emphasizing through his teachings. We see in the conversation with Ramananda Roy. You know, Ramananda Roy was presenting many different things. And Lord Chaitanya wasn't rejecting them as being inappropriate practices of spiritual life, but he was saying, but this is not the ultimate goal, this is not the conclusion. And ultimately he brought him to this point of this you know, unmotivated, uninterrupted surrender to Krishna. And the same point is given there in the Bhagavatam, this ahoituki apratihata. And this is yayatma supersedit. It's a very interesting verse, this, because it's pointing out that, like, that devotional service is sarvai pungasamparo dhamo yata bhakti rahokshe ahoituki apratihata yayatma supersedit. It's pointing out that the supreme dharma occupational for mankind is that yato bhakti ruchi. What's the next line?
Is that
next line? No, that's the third line, the second line. Is that by which men can attain? Yeah, but I'm just wondering the translation. I forgot the translation.
Is that by which men can attain?
So it's under the transcendent Lord. Yeah, so it's saying that the supreme dharma, because, you know, like dharma, in Prabhupada, he translates dharma very aptly when he points out dharma means like the constitutional nature of a thing. It means, you know, just like he says, the dharma of sugar is to be sweet. If it's hot and spicy, then it's not sugar. It's something different. You know, or like water. Water is a very interesting thing because water, depending on how you apply energy to it, changes its nature. So for instance, when you heat it up, all the cooks will know, when you heat it up, it becomes steam. You know? It's no longer water, it has a different nature. It's hot, it's gaseous, it's vaporous, you know. Or when you cool it down below 0 degrees Celsius, it changes its nature again. No longer water, becomes ice. So even though you may do different things to it, then it changes its nature. But the nature of water is that it's wet, it's liquid. That's the nature. Well, everything has its nature. So he points out that the nature of the living entity is religiosity, or the Dharma is religiosity, which means to serve Krishna. Religiosity means to serve God. There's no other understanding of it. So then Prabhupada, actually not Prabhupada, in that verse it points out that the supreme Dharma, it says, Sarvai Pungsam Paro Dharmo. For Pungsa means mankind. Yeah? Paro Dharmo, the supreme or the ultimate occupation, is that occupation which engages them in this devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he points out that it is ahoituki apratihata, that this devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted. Yayatma suprasidati, to completely satisfy the self. So the process of devotional service, when it is practiced according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Now Rupa Goswami, he makes this point very nicely. What's that? Shuti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatik Vidim Vidya Aikantika Hare Bhakti Utpatayaiva Kalpate. That he's pointing out that devotional service which is not according to the tenets of the Shastra is sentimentalism and nothing but a disturbance in society. So one may practice devotional service, you know, according to their own whim, or according to, not just devotional service, but practice religiosity, you know, which for us is devotional service, according to their own whim or according to common perceptions of what religiosity is. And we see that in most of the religions that are present in this world, or so-called religions that are present in this world, a lot of the practice is according to common perceptions. You know, what people think it should be, or you know, like I was having a discussion with someone last night about, I don't know if anyone knows what a Tali or a Mangal Sutra, I'm sure you know what it is, a Mangal Sutra. Traditionally in India, people will get these talis or the wife will get a tali or a Mangal Sutra around their neck. And this is, well, Mangal means auspicious, Sutra means thread. Originally it was made with turmeric. They'd have, I can't remember if it was turmeric root or turmeric in a bag, and be a thread and they'd tie it around. And then they, you know, discussed how, like, you know, they tie three knots at the back, and one's tied by the husband, one's tied by the brother, and one's tied by a girl or a lady with a male child. And they give all these different reasons why one has to be done by the husband, one has to be done by the brother, and one has to be done, you know. But then if you analyze these things, then oftentimes you find out they're not according to scripture, they're not according to sadhu or anything like that, or guru. It's just like traditional things that have developed over the years that, you know, it's very much like the story of the cat in the basket. Prabhupada tells this story about a cat in a basket at the wedding. And the essence of it is that one time this girl, she was getting married and, you know, doing all the preparations for the wedding, and the mother saw this cat and said, "Oh, how inauspicious." And she grabbed the cat and she put it in a basket, put the lid on, put a brick on it so the cat couldn't get out. And her daughter saw that. She didn't ask her mother why she did it or anything. And she saw that. So many years later, she got married, she had children, and she got older, her children grew up, and her daughter was getting married. And her daughter's getting married in a distant place, and she says to her mother, "Mother, all the preparations have been made for the wedding, is there anything I should do? Anything that's special I should do?" And she says, "Yes, you must put a cat in a basket." And she goes, "Why, Mother?" And she says, "I don't know, my mother did it at my wedding, so you should do it at your wedding." And, you know, without any proper understanding, she's gone ahead and like, you know, harassed this poor cat, put it in a basket, you know. And we see things like that happen in all religious traditions, that there's something has happened and it hasn't been understood. You know, something's been done and it hasn't been understood. So people therefore speculate reasons. It's the general tendency is people speculate either that or they just do it and not understand. And you see that many religious groups do these types of things. They practice these different things, not knowing why it is done, not knowing why we do it, or you know, they'll just do it without understanding, or they'll do it and then speculate a reason why. You know, because, well, you know, the nature of some people is they want to understand everything. So rather than approach Guru and Sadhu Shastra to find out the reason, they'll speculate. So it's the same thing in essence, because they're practicing practicing activities of so-called devotional service without reference to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And as Rupa Goswami says, they're nothing but a disturbance to society, because we see what happens is that people become attached to performing their religiosity or devotional service in this means, and then when someone comes and explains to them, oh, but you don't do it like this, it's not done like that, it should, according to the Shastra, according to, you know, Guru Sadhu Shastra, it should be done like this, and they become all disturbed by it. You know, and these different groups spring up following all different types of practices that have come from, you know, sentimentalism or traditions and things like that, and become very rigid in these practices. And we see, you know, various groups, like for instance various Jewish groups, they're very entrenched in their ritualism. And you'll see there's many different religious groups around the world. They have some various religious practices and they're very, very entrenched in it. And for them, the ritual is everything. And this is what Rupa Goswami, he describes as Niyamagraha. You know, you practice the rules and regulations or the ritual only for the sake of the ritual and not for the sake of spiritual advancement. Or the other thing that Rupa Goswami talks about is you get the other extreme, is people who just disregard all the ritual, you know, and think, well, I just do it, you know, this way because the rituals are just inhibiting, they're going to, you know, block your natural flow of bhakti back to Krishna. Even within Gaudiya Vaishnavism we find these types of things being presented. So our acharyas present a very balanced approach to devotional service. It's like Rupa Goswami, he talks about this Niyamagraha, he talks about how, you know, some people they're following the rules and regulations only for the sake of the rules and regulations and not for the sake of spiritual advancement. So he's saying, it's like, and then on the other hand he talks about those who reject the rules and regulations or the ritual of devotional service. So he's saying, you know, we can see from this, the ritual needs to be there, the rules and regulations of devotional service need to be there, but they need to be practiced with the view of pleasing Krishna, with the view of serving Krishna. So then we have the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Some persons will say that, well, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is for neophytes. We accept that. Yet if you follow Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, you will not achieve Goloka. You'll only go to Vaikuntha. And there's a group that preaches like this. Yet this is not in line with the teachings of Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami points out that if we follow the rules and regulations, he says, what's that verse? What's the first line? Anya abhilasha shunyan jnana kamana anukulyena Krishna anushilana bhakti uttama. So he's saying that that this devotional service needs to be practiced favorably, and then he makes this very interesting statement, which, you know, like some of the commentaries speak about, is this Krishna anushilana. It must be done favorably and with the intention of pleasing Krishna. This, because it's connected with Krishna, because it has this intention of pleasing Krishna, then we practice the rules and regulations, we practice Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, it will take us back to Krishna. As long as anukulyena Krishna, favorable intention to please Krishna. And this is the gopis, this is what they're doing. Whatever they're doing is simply for the satisfaction of Krishna. Yet we see, you know, personalities like Kamsa. He was 24 hours a day meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if you think of it, well, this is the goal, is we want to be completely absorbed in Krishna 24 hours a day. It's described how he couldn't not think of Krishna. He couldn't not think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he's thinking, when is the cruel death of my life coming? Constantly he's thinking of Krishna. Yet, because his meditation upon Krishna was pratikul, or unfavorable, therefore it did not take him to Krishna. He was killed by Krishna, yes, but that did not take him back to the spiritual world. Yet we see with devotees like Mother Yasoda, she's chasing, you know, like Krishna broke the pot of yogurt, you know, and was feeding it to the monkeys. She became very angry with him. So what did she do? She picked up a stick and started to chase him around the courtyard. And you think, well, look, she's trying to beat Krishna. This is not favorable. She's trying to inflict harm upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yet because she had this loving sentiment, because she was doing it for the benefit of Krishna, because she was trying to, well, you know, he's my son, it's my responsibility to see that he grows up into a nice young boy, and if he's going around stealing things and breaking things and giving it to the monkeys, this is not proper behavior. He needs to learn. So she's in this mood of you know, vatsalya. She's absorbed in you know, being Krishna's mother and being a good mother for Krishna. So it's a very, very favorable, you know, so people may see these things, just like, you know, in the Mahabharata, there's the story about how Yudhisthira Maharaj's chariot used to float above the ground. Now, some people give a different, you know, like at one point it stopped, you know, floating above the ground and touched on the ground. Some people will say that the reason that happened is because he told a lie. But Vaishnavas have a different perception, because he actually said that, you know, that, what is it, Ashvatthama the elephant is dead, and then Bhima blew his conch just so no one heard the elephant part. And so some people will interpret that saying, oh, his chariot is touching the ground because he told a lie. But Vaishnavas understand it differently. They say, no, the reason his chariot is now touching the ground is because he hesitated to follow the instructions of Krishna. So the Vaishnava acharyas, they give the clear understanding of the actual situation, whereas other commentators who are not understanding these pastimes through the eyes of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, misunderstand. They misunderstand the practice of devotional service also. They are just like I was mentioning the other day about in the worship of the deity, there's many interesting misunderstandings in the worship of the deity. One that's prevalent in the Vallabha Sampradaya is when they worship Gopal. They worship Gopal because they think, oh, this is Krishna before he was contaminated by the lust of the rasa dance. Yeah? And there's many such perceptions. So like Mayavadis, they perceive that the deity is just a material manifestation of Brahman. And that, you know, I'm worshipping the deity as a device to become purified. And actually, that such worship will never purify them because it's very offensive. Such worship will only help them become more and more bound up in the material world because they have such an offensive attitude. And actually, there's a really nice ye nye ravindaksha vi mukti manina tvayi yashta bhavat avishuddha buriya aruya krachena param param pada patanti yado yushmat angraya. Patanti ado yushmat, yeah. So it's saying that, it's describing, it's a conversation between Lord Brahma and the demigods. And they're talking about, you know, say, okay, devotees, you know, they actually go to Krishna's lotus people. What happens to those, you know, who are not great devotees? What happens to those who, you know, they meditate upon the Brahman? And he talks, it's quite a lot of interesting philosophy contained in this verse. And then it talks about how Avishuddha Buddhaya, it talks about that they achieve this Vimukta Manina. It's very interesting. It's like they're thinking in their mind that they're liberated. They're thinking they've achieved this imagined position of superiority. And it says, Avishuddha Buddhaya. It's because they have impure intelligence. They're thinking, I'm so advanced. I've made so much progress on the path of spiritual life. You know? And it says, Patanti Ado Yushmat Angraya. It says, but ultimately, Lord Brahma describes, ultimately they fall down. And why do they fall down? This is because they have neglected the Lord's lotus feet. So this is the only solution to any problem of life. This is the only way to achieve spiritual emancipation or liberation, is to fix ourselves, fix our minds upon the lotus feet of Krishna. By this practice of, and we see this is what the gopis are doing here, they're with their heart, their body, their words, everything, they're just completely fixed upon the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, they achieve the supreme destination. Not they achieve, they're already there. They're already fixed in the supreme destination, the lotus feet of Krishna. But for others, they may be practicing their so-called activities of spiritual life. Yet, where does it take them? It takes them exactly nowhere. And Prabhupada, he says, the only result they get is the endeavor itself. That's all they get out of it. They're making so much endeavor. We see, you know, these different so-called spiritualists and religionists, they're making so much endeavor in their practice,
to try to achieve their perception, their vimuktimanina idea of what is the goal. Yet because they don't actually have a clear concept, you know, Prabhupada would talk about Mahatma Gandhi and like the perception he had of the Gita, and he said he was misdirected. So he's speaking all this big philosophy about Gita, but he was misdirected. Therefore, because he was misdirected, he did not achieve the supreme goal of religion. And anyone who's in this situation, anyone who's practicing this so-called activities of religiosity, yet does not have clear understanding or clear direction, will never achieve the supreme goal. And this the same point is there, Matina Krishna Paratosa Tova Mitoba Bibadyata Grihavranam. Adanta Gobi Vishatam Timisham Puna Punas Chavita Chavananam. It's like persons who are thinking that sense gratification, material enjoyment, is the goal of life, they will never understand Matir Ne Krishna, they'll never know Krishna. Parato Svatova, by their own endeavours, by the endeavours of others. I was listening to this class the other day when Prabhupada was quoting this verse, and he's talking about, he said, even if they get initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, they will never understand Krishna because they're thinking that this sense gratification is the goal of life. As long as we have this perception that sense gratification, this is what it's all about. And even though it may not be such a gross manifestation like we see with materialistic people, you know, they just like spend their entire energy just trying to improve their position in terms of, you know, dharma, artha, karma, moksha, or as Kunti says, janma, aishvarya, shruti, shibi. They're just trying to improve their material position. Cannot approach Krishna. Even if it's a gross thing, or it can be a subtle thing. One may be practicing devotional service, yet using their position or their situation in devotional service to expand their field of sense gratification. It can be a very, very subtle thing, or it can be a very gross thing. We need to constantly be analysing ourselves to see how I'm practicing the activities of devotional service, how serious I am about what I'm doing, how serious I am about cultivating this love of Krishna. How much do I want to give up my attachment to my body, to my family, to my relatives, to my country, you know, to my good name in society? How serious am I about giving that up? And how serious am I about just surrendering to Krishna? And the gopis are setting such a perfect example. They have no attraction or attachment to anything but Krishna. Yeah? And Prabhupada, he often talks about this, you know, the Vrindavan mood. I've mentioned this several times. It's often quite amusing. There was a period there when there was Vajaris in a particular temple. They were talking about how they're dressing the deity in the Vrindavan mood. And their idea was that just meant you don't put anything on Krishna, just dress him with a, you know, very simple clothes and a top knot, you know. But which is completely against the instructions of what Prabhupada said for deity worship. He said, you know, deity worship means to dress the deity very opulently. So that was their idea, that was their, you know, concocted or imaginative idea of what Vrindavan mood was. Prabhupada describes the Vrindavan mood very simply. He says the Vrindavan mood means you cannot help but 24 hours a day think of Krishna. And this we see all the residents of Vrindavan. What they're engaged in is just simply, you know, thinking about Krishna. Just like, you know, this class Prabhupada was talking about the other day, how the gopis, when Krishna, he's going down to the pasturing grounds, you know, and there's so much anxiety, they're so disturbed. They're seeing Krishna running down to the pasturing grounds barefooted, you know, and they're thinking to themselves that his feet are so tender, they're even so tender that when we put upon our breast, we're worried about hurting his tender feet. So how much are the little pebbles and the blades of grass hurting his lotus feet? And they're becoming, Prabhupada was describing how they're becoming so much anxiety they almost faint. Yeah? They're so absorbed in Krishna. I mean, it's just, you know, it's really inconceivable how absorbed, you know, that they get in some anxiety about Krishna's going to hurt his lotus feet. I mean, we'd see someone walking around barefoot, oh, they're stupid enough to do that, let them do it, you know. But they're not thinking like that. They think Krishna, he's so beloved to them that he may hurt his feet, and they almost pass out from anxiety. I mean, this is absorption in Krishna. And this is what the Vrindavan mood means, is they're completely absorbed. Just like, you know, we read some chapters ago about the pastime of Kaliya, when Mother Yasoda and the elderly cowherd woman, they came down to the Jamuna and they saw Krishna in the water fighting with Kaliya. They died. They actually died. You know, they were so disturbed by the situation, they just, you know, she just fainted and almost gave up a life that is described, you know. And Krishna had to revise them. What do you call it? Revise, as we do with a book. Revive them all when they when he came out of the water, you know. So and we see this in the same, you know, like, I mean, so many pastimes you see the residents of Vrindavan. And at least the way I see it is that these pastimes are enacted, it's not the way I see it, it's actually the way the Acharyas describe it. These pastimes are enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to attract us. So we can see how the most elevated persons, the most elevated devotees, how they serve Krishna, what their meditation is on Krishna, you know, how they act to try to please Krishna. And we see, they give up everything. They simply give up everything. Or we see with Yasoda Mayi, you know, when she's acting to please Krishna, she's making milk for Krishna, and she's constantly meditating upon how, you know, she's not making milk, she's making yogurt, and she's sending the cows out, and she's making sure the cows go to the best pasturing grounds. She hears all this in very good grass over there, so she tells Nanda Maharaj to take the cows over there, so they're eating this really sweet grass, so the milk's really sweet, so she can make very sweet yogurt for Krishna, so he won't go to other people's houses and steal the yogurt there. You know? She's just constantly absorbed in this meditation of how to please Krishna. All the other gopis in Vrindavan, they're constantly absorbed in these meditations. Oh, I'd like to have Krishna as my son. You know, this little young boy Krishna is my son. So what does he do? He arranges it for them. He manifests as Brahma Vimohan Lila. You know, with Brahma he comes and he steals all the calves and the cowherd boys. And then for that whole year, he manifests himself as all their sons. And the cows, they also have this same meditation. Oh, I'd like to be able to lick Krishna. I'd like to have Krishna sucking on my udder. So he manifests the pastime. He becomes all the calves. So in this way, you know, when devotees have these desires, these pure desires, Krishna acts to fulfill all these desires. So in the same way for us, we see if we can develop these sincere desires to serve and to please Krishna, then Krishna will manifest these different situations. And we see in the lives of this, you know, preachers in ISKCON who are very seriously acting and working to push on this Krishna consciousness movement. And you see that Krishna makes so many nice arrangements for them to push on Krishna consciousness. Same with Srila Prabhupada. Made so many wonderful arrangements for Prabhupada. I mean, look, he came to the West in 1965 or 6. In 1965, on his own, with a box, you know, a trunk full of books, an Indian trunk full of books, and 40 rupees. Huh? I mean, 40 rupees in those days was quite a bit more than what it is now. I think it was about 40 rupees would have been about
$7.
Yeah, $7 or something. It was, you know, it's only about a dollar, not even a dollar now. But you know, he came with nothing and an address. And an address also. He came with nothing. Yet by his sincere desire to serve Krishna, so much was achieved. I mean, you know, and I was listening to this series of interviews that he did in late 1976, and he was saying that we have 102 temples. So from those humble beginnings in 1965, 11 years later, 102 temples, and thousands and thousands of followers, and 80 volumes of books, 400 pages each. Prabhupada will always say that 80 volumes of books are 400 pages each. I mean, how much he achieved by his sincere desire to serve Krishna. And the same example the gopis are giving there, by this sincere desire. So it's not that we can expect to come to this level of devotional service overnight. It takes a lot of practice. It takes, you know, I was listening to this, as we were having this conversation last night, and this point Prabhupada made, and I couldn't remember the point, and now I remember it. It's a really good point. That Prabhupada was talking about, someone was asking a question about Swarup, and Prabhupada got on their case. He says, there's no question of Swarup without Anatta Nivritti, without Bhajana Kriya. You know, without the process of purification, there's no question of understanding these different pastimes, of practicing in this way like the gopis do. So Prabhupada emphasized that we follow the rules and regulations of devotional service. And by this practice of following the rules and regulations of devotional service, we become purified. And the more we become purified, the more we understand. In the same way as the more you clean a mirror, the more the mirror has the capacity to reflect the image. But if it's covered by dust, it has no capacity at all to do anything, because you don't even know it's a mirror. Yeah? So by the process of Bhajanakriya, by cleansing the anarthas from the heart, then the pure jiva becomes more revealed, and we're actually able to understand more and more our constitutional position, and we're able to understand more and more these different pastimes of the Lord. So there's no question of coming to practices like this overnight, yet by following the process of devotional service, we will eventually, if we sincerely follow according to the guidelines given by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, if we sincerely follow this practice of devotional service, we will eventually come to this understanding, and we will eventually become qualified to serve Krishna in such a manner, this selfless, completely focused upon Krishna manner. And this is the goal of Krishna Bhakti. Don't be, deviated by other opinions or even by your own opinion. Because this is quite a challenging thing, because, the mind is offering so many conclusions at every minute practically, offering every second, offering conclusions on how we should do this and how we should do that. The senses are pushing us, the mind, the intelligence. That painting that's in the Gita, you see that painting with the chariot with the five horses and the chariot driver and all that. So it's described how the horses are the senses and the reins are the mind and the driver is the intelligence. And you see on the back the poor souls just screaming on the back of the chariot. And it's interesting, if you look carefully at the picture, you'll see where's the chariot going. Yeah, there's a big cliff there. Yeah. So that's what it's like in for the living entity in this world who's not using the mind, the intelligence, senses to serve Krishna, which Narad Muni talks about. He says, "Sarvapadi vinyamuktam tatpadatvam nimalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchati." If we use our senses, our mind and intelligence to serve Krishna, Narad Muni says this is the platform of devotional service. And by doing this, then sarvapadi vinyamuktam, these upadis, they all become vinyamuktam, destroyed. These false designations. Tatparatvena nirmalam, and we become restored to our original pure identity as a servant of Krishna. So by engaging the senses, it's a step-by-step process. It's not like we were talking the other day about the Sakhi Bekis. They think just by imitating the activities of the Sakhis, the Sahajas, by imitating these activities of the Sakhis, and they can become. You can't. No, the purification is required. They don't perform any process of purification. They just think, okay, now I'll become a Sakhi. Now I'll become Krishna's mother. Now I'll become Krishna's friend. Without any preliminary purification. No, the purification must be there. Because Krishna is the supreme pure. He is a transcendental personality. We cannot associate with the Lord through matter. No, only through this pure consciousness can we directly associate with Krishna. So by purifying ourselves through the process of devotional service, through Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, through practicing the rules and regulations of devotional service, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, according to the guidelines given by Guru and Sadhana Shastra, then we become purified. And then when we achieve this, Tat Paratrena Nirmala, this original pure identity of the living entity, then we can practice this devotional service in the same mood as the residents of Vrindavan, and not before that. It's not a cheap thing. Devotional service is not a cheap thing that you can just after 6 months of chanting Hare Krishna you become a pure devotee. And it's not like that, You chant this much, Prabhupada would often criticize these types of yogis, you chant this, you give me some money, I'll give you a mantra. You chant this mantra for 6 months, you become God. Okay, maybe they become some kind of God, but who wants to be that kind of God anyhow? That's some cheap, imitation. It's all this is just a cheap imitation. No, we're interested in the real thing. And this Krishna consciousness, this is the real thing. It's not a cheap imitation. There are no... Prabhupada gave the shortcut method. There is nothing more shortcut than what Prabhupada gave. You cannot get there quicker. You cannot achieve purification any quicker than the system that Prabhupada gave. I mean, he shortcut it so much. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that if you cannot chant 64 rounds, you're less than human, you're an animal. And Prabhupada, realizing that Westerners couldn't do that, said, okay, 16 rounds, minimum. He shortcut it as much as possible. You cannot get there any quicker than the method that Prabhupada gave. But if you follow the method that Prabhupada gave, you will get there. What does Krishna say? He says, asang sayam. He says, without a doubt, if you follow this process, without a doubt, you will achieve me. So, if we follow the process, as Prabhupada has given us, you know, and the Acharyas have given us, then without a doubt we will achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the same way that the residents of Vrindavan are understanding him, we can also understand him. We can have that kind of relationship with Krishna. Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions at all? Dr. Glenn.
Could you please read the translation of verbal blue recording?
Oh, sorry. I forgot. I forgot all about that. There's so much in the verse. Translation. Although Krishna was their beloved, and although they had abandoned all other objects of desire for his sake, he had been speaking to them unfavorably. Nonetheless, they remained unflinching in their attachment to him. Stopping their crying, they wiped their eyes and began to speak, their voices stammering with agitation. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says something really interesting about this. He's wiping their eyes. And he's saying, they're wiping their eyes because they're thinking they're never going to see him again, so we may as well just have one last look before we die. Yeah? I mean, can you imagine such attachment? We're not going to see him again, therefore we're going to die. That is serious attachment. I mean, it's like, you know, my father died when I was 13, I think. Maybe he was a bit younger, but something like that, you know. And I was upset for a while. Definitely I was upset. I mean, I'm not, you know, hard-hearted or not so hard-hearted. I was upset. I cried quite a bit. But I didn't think I was going to die because I'm not seeing him again. I mean, I was quite close with my father. We used to do a lot of stuff together, more so than the other brothers. But I didn't think I was going to die. But the Gopis are thinking, we're not going to see Krishna again. We're going to die. Such attachment they have. Purport. The Gopis now reply to Sri Krishna, their voices choking up with anger, caused by their intense love for him and their unwillingness to give him up. They would not allow him to reject them. That's purport. Such intense attachment they have. And we can also achieve this anurag, this intense attachment, through the process of devotional service. It's not mythical. It's not unattainable. If we intensely apply ourselves to the process of devotional service, we can achieve that same intense attachment. And Prabhupada would say, in this very life you can achieve it. You can go back to Godhead in this very life through the process of devotional service. Lord Chaitanya has given us the easiest process simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, by, you know, and following the rules and regulations, by chanting offenselessly, not just chanting. And chanting also implies hearing. Yeah? What's the meaning to, it's like, you know, saying the sound of one hand clapping. You know, what's the sound of one hand clapping? You need two hands. Huh? And in the same way, chanting implies hearing. So we chant Hare Krishna, it means you must also hear attentively. Yeah? And Haridas Thakur points out that the different dasanam aparads, they stem from inattentive chanting. So this is very important. Is if we practice very enthusiastically this process of devotional service, and very seriously this process of devotional service, we will achieve this goal without a doubt. Krishna says that throughout the Gita. Without a doubt, you'll achieve it. Any questions at all? Prabhu?
Is it the process itself that brings one to want to please Krishna with all actions and words and thoughts? Or is it, okay, seems like there's an element of a leap of faith there, because we're very self-motivated in the beginning, wanting to pray for ourselves. Just wanting to please Krishna can sometimes feel like an austerity because of the condition.
Mm.
So is it the process itself that brings one sudden bhakti, brings one to want to please Krishna? Or is it a conscious change, or how does that come about?
Prabhu's asking, is it the process itself that brings one to the stage of wanting to practice devotional service, of wanting to please Krishna, or is there an actual change of nature? Is that correct? The process is very effective and powerful. There is no doubt. It is the intrinsic nature of the living entity to serve Krishna. Jivera sarupa hoi Krishna nityadas. So the situation we're in now is that we have a contaminated consciousness. It is not our natural state to to be serving the senses. This is our contaminated state. Our natural state is to serve Krishna. So yes, a change of consciousness is required. The process of devotional service brings about that change of consciousness because it's purifying us. It's removing the anarthas, it's removing your party. This false designation, thinking that I am a man, I am a cat, I am a dog, whatever. This is the upadi. The process of devotional service removes that contamination so you can understand, oh, actually no, I am Krishna's eternal servant. Let me now act upon that understanding. And so through the process of purity, you need these things. You need to practice the activities of devotional service. You can't just one day wake up and say, oh, okay, now I'm going to become a pure unalloyed devotee of Krishna, yet still you have all these anarthas, all these contaminations within the heart. You need to be purified from this. And the process of devotional service is the vehicle of this purification. It's just like, you know, there's that description, Tomna Sandashito, and I don't know the rest of the verse, where they're praying to Shaunaka Rishi, that, you know, that my dear master, you are the captain of the ship, you know, and the Vedas are the favourable winds that are blowing us back to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we need, you know, it's just like when you sail a ship, you need a captain, you need someone to steer, you need someone who knows, you know, not just, it's okay, the guy who actually does the physical steering, he has his job, but on his own, he doesn't know how to do it all. Yeah? And you have the guy who works down in the engine room, you have the guy, or if it's a sailing ship, you have the guys who put all the sails up, so they know their individual job. But the captain is the one who knows the, you know, the overall perspective of everything, how it all fits together and where we need to go to. We don't know that. We don't know all the details of it, but the guru knows that. Yeah? And the Vedas, they're like the favourable winds blowing the ship in the right direction back to Godhead. I was listening to something interesting the other day. Prabhupada was talking. It's a nice way to understand, you know, to understand the Shastra. He's saying that if one's in a situation where you don't know your father, you know, your father is not present, how do you understand the father?
Mother.
Through the mother. Because the mother says, this is the father. She knows. She was there. Yeah? You weren't. Mm-hmm. Not in a form, you know, a cognizant form. Yeah? So then in order to understand the Supreme Father Krishna, we have to ask the mother. And the mother is the Veda. The Veda is giving the direction on who is the mother. Yeah? So we need the Shastra to help us to understand who Krishna is. Yeah? And Krishna says that in this first verse of the seventh chapter of the Gita, which is, you know, is obviously a verse Prabhupada liked because he gave class on that verse more than any other verse. And Krishna says, he says, now hear from me, O son of Prita, how by practicing devotional service in full consciousness of me, you can attain me in full, free from doubt. So he's saying, you know, by practicing this devotional service in full consciousness of me, knowing me, that you will attain me, free. He says, asang sayam samagram yati gasasi tashinu, you know. Asam sayam, without a doubt, you'll achieve me. If you practice this process of devotional service according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. If you make up your own process of devotional service, there's an interesting sloka where it talks about how, you know, devotees who, or people who follow an unbona fide guru are just like people who are sailing on a lead boat. And if a boat's made of lead, we know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's just going to sink. Yeah? So, yeah, we need to follow the practice or the process of religion, devotional service, whatever you want to call it, according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. You know, very carefully, being very attentive to spot offences, being very attentive to spot little deviations. You know, even minor deviations, you know, you start with a minor deviation now, it seems, oh, it's nothing, it's just a little thing, don't worry about it, boo. It's just like with the train track, you know, as long as the tracks are parallel, the train will run smoothly and there'll be no problems. But if there's a slight deviation, if one of the tracks is starting to move out a little bit, you get 10 miles down the track, I see your hand, Ru, it's okay. If you get 10 miles down the track, then what happens? There's a derailment, there's disaster. So just a slight deviation in the beginning may not seem like anything, but it builds, you know, and we start thinking, oh, that's okay, and then you think, oh, but Dad, this is okay, it doesn't matter, I can drink Coca-Cola, it doesn't matter. You know, that's okay, I can go to the movies, that doesn't matter. That's okay, I can do this, I can, you know. chat up the Brahmacharinis or chat up the Brahmacharis, it doesn't matter, you know, it's just a little thing anyhow. I'm pretty strong, I can control it. What happens is we get more and more open to this idea of these little, you know, subtle deviations. And after a while, they're not so subtle anymore. They become quite gross. And this takes us away from Krishna consciousness. So it's good to be always attentive. Not for other people, because it's very easy to spot everyone else's deviations. That's simple. Anyone can do that. You know, if you're very smart, you spot someone else's problems. No, focus on your own. Of course, if you're somebody's guru or father or whatever, then that's your business to do that. But, yeah, we need to be very attentive to our own practice of devotional service. Yeah.
I don't know how relevant mine is, but there's a book called Spiritual Warrior. I was wondering, do you have any opinion on the content of that literature?
They're written by Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and I haven't read his books myself because I struggle with Prabhupada's books. You know, I just try to focus on that. I know Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. And he's a very serious devotee, a very serious follower of Prabhupada. He's written those books targeting a different audience to bring them to Krishna consciousness. And you'll see that, you know, David Meenamaraj also does books in a similar kind of vein, like, you know, sort of more like outreach books, you know, to try and attract people who may not know, you know, like, you know, if you go to some people, if you go to them dressed in a dhoti and you present them one of Prabhupada's books and you can ask Bhakti Klan about that, it's like, oh no, not these Hare Krishnas. You know, so sometimes you need to put something in different packaging, just like, you know, sometimes with pills you have to coat them with candy to make them taste sweet so the children will eat them. I remember when we lived in Malaysia, we used to have to take these malaria pills, quinine, terrible tasting stuff, very, very bitter. But what they used to do is they'd put this pink sugar coating around the outside, so we'd really, you know, because we like lollies, so we take this the pill, you know, and it goes down quite nicely. So sometimes devotees have presented books in a different light, or presented the philosophy in a different light, because many people think Krishna consciousness is a cult. So they remove that kind of appearance from it a little bit, without changing the philosophy. I mean, he doesn't change the philosophy at all. And my wife's read all these books, and she finds them very, you know, motivating in Krishna consciousness. So, yeah. You need to see things in their proper perspective and how they're intended, and not just say, well, this book's like this, Prabhupada's book's like this, therefore this book's bogus.
No, I just was curious because I haven't read the books myself. I just had the second-hand impressions.
Mm-hmm.
I was just curious if that was what you were talking about, or if that related to what you were talking about, that minor difference, the same minor difference can lead to a completely different outcome.
I don't see any difference in it. He's just approaching, you know, the same thing in a different way, trying to attract people who would not necessarily be attracted if we gave them the Bhagavatam. You know, because, I mean, so many people, you give them the books and they read all these big Sanskrit words, it's like, huh? What's that? You know, it's like, they just can't, you know. And a lot of people, when they come across, like, you know, Dhritarashtra, it's not, you know, just looking at it, it's a hard word to say, so they just put the book down and go into something else. You know, so the idea is to somehow or other is to rekindle that flame of attraction to Krishna. So if by packaging things slightly differently we can do that, then that's successful. And then once that flame is kindled, then we can fan the flame more and more and feed it more and more and attract them more and more, say, to Prabhupada's books, give them a Bhagavad Gita or something some point down the track. But first we need to reawaken that attraction. So I think these books, you know, by Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, by David Meenam Maharaj and others, which are not sort of like direct in-your-face Hare Krishna preaching, have a very important role to play. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, yeah. That system of verification was tried about 6 or 7 years ago, and I mean there have some very, very elevated devotees, you know, on the Shastric approval committee, whatever it was called, But they just came to the conclusion that the volume of books being released was so vast that they could not keep up. I mean, there's literally, you know, hundreds of books coming out all the time. Just so many books. I think really what we need to do is, you know, for devotees at least, study Prabhupada's books very clearly, get a firm basis in the philosophy, particularly Bhagavad Gita, and then read these books with a firm basis in, you know, of understanding from Prabhupada's books. Then you can see if there's things that are off track. You know, I mean, to actually have an official body that's going to do all that would be just so resource-consuming and not very practical. So we need to. It's the same as like when you're taking initiation or taking a spiritual master, the disciple needs to develop the discrimination of how to choose. It's just, I mean, the amount of devotees who get initiated in ISKCON every year, it would not be possible, you know, to have some official body that checked everyone and you know, recorded everything. It's just, I mean, sometimes like Jaipur Takumar, he does initiations in like, you know, distant villages in Bangladesh where like 1,000 people come walking for 2 or 3 days to get there from some remote village that there's no roads or anything like that, you know. And, you know, like, you know, they can't write, they can't read, they can't do any of this type of stuff. So, you know, it's too, ISKCON is too broad, too big, you know, spread over the whole planet. And to try to regulate these types of things is just not practical. I mean, it's a good idea, but... So we need to develop our discrimination ourselves on these things. Mahatmaji, last question.
About the question of 24 hours absorption in Krishna, can you give us some practical hints besides chanting and hearing?
If I was to give some practical hints, it would mean that I was doing that.
Your absorption in Krishna?
I think my opinion, this is my opinion, is by very strictly following the rules and regulations of devotional service and attentively hearing the holy name. And this way, you know, the anathas become purified. There's no secret, you know. Like devotees would often ask Prabhupada for like special tips on how I can do it quicker and stuff like that. There's no secret, or it's an open secret if you like. You just follow the process of devotional service very strictly and chant the holy name.
The last quote from Prabhupada is that life should be moulded in such a way
that you cannot help but think of Krishna 24 hours a day. And that's the process of devotional service. That's like the whole process of Vaidhi Sandha Bhakti. As Prabhupada set it up, not as some, because Prabhupada, it wasn't just like a chance thing he set up like this. He told Brahmananda in 1970 or 71, I think it was 71 when he first established the worship. Actually, Satsarup Maharaj, when he wrote the Leelamrita, then there was 8 books which were stories from the Leelamrita that didn't make it in to the Leelamrita. There's 8 books, and there's one that was called 108 Rose Bushes. And in that, I think I've got that at home actually. And in that book, 108 Rose Bushes, then it's telling a story about how Prabhupada established the whole morning program and everything in Los Angeles. So Prabhupada, at the time, this is not recorded anywhere, something I heard from Brahmananda, I think it was from Brahmananda, he was saying that up until that point he'd been experimenting with the holy name to see what would work with the Western mentality. And so that Prabhupada, he very carefully moulded the morning program we followed. So that, you know, not just the morning program, the whole lifestyle we follow, he very carefully structured that, you know, took various elements of the Gaudiya Vaishnava culture, etc., and structured it in such a way that it would be suitable for us to become purified as rapidly as possible. So Prabhupada gave a specific medicine for a specific disease. It wasn't just a chance thing or something you just grabbed out of a book, you know. No, he carefully analysed the situation and gave us exactly the medicine we needed. And it's just like you yourself as a doctor, you analyse the disease and there can be very small variations in the medicine, but you analyse the disease and you give the exact right thing for that disease. So that's what Prabhupada's done. He's analysed our disease and given us the exact right medicine. So if we just strictly follow the process that Prabhupada gave us, and that's the best thing. Okay.